our right honorable prime hypocrite, sorry, prime minister, offers us a masterclass in greenhouse gas emission with a T-Rex-sized carbon footprint, forgetting that our country is plummeting into climate catastrophe, according to him, of course. And Canadians are seeking asylum in the United States, according to a Buffalo immigration lawyer. I have much to say about that, but I'll give the final word to Mel Gibson as William Wallace in Braveheart. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, then shame on you. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. It's August 11th. I'm Andrew DiBartolo, and this is the Liberty Dispatch. Welcome to the Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. Whether you're watching or listening to our show, please make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share it on all our platforms, whether it's video or audio. It helps us track what's going on. It helps us spread the word. We want to get this information out to more and more Canadians that they also can be involved in the culture war in Canada. We're also part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network that has a number of tremendous shows, both American and Canadian, whether it's Aaron Rock's podcast or the Rebel podcast or the one done by the Ezra Institute. So make sure that you go over to flfnetwork.com or download the app, the FLF app, where you can listen to and watch all of the podcasts. It's a great connection, great resource as well. You can also go to libertycoalitioncanada.com, sign up for our email list, see our initiatives. Also, please donate to us for the various things with which we're involved, whether that's legal work, whether that's our analysis. We're wanting to add shows, grow our reach, so please get connected with us. And last, send any comments and questions you have to info@libertycoalitioncanada.com. We read them. We respond to them. We've actually had some pretty decent interaction lately. A lot of our audience has been reaching out with questions, with comments, and we'd love it. So please do that. info@libertycoalitioncanada.com. This first segment is brought to you by Rocklink Investment Partners. The team at Rocklink is not and does not support a woke, Marxist, WEF-friendly, cancel culture worldview. And they've created the Kokomo Fund in light of bank accounts being seized and frozen under the Emergencies Act, or under its true name, the War Measures Act. Rocklink can help you move your investment overseas based in the Cayman Islands, the world's number one offshore market for investment funds. Please give the freedom lovers at Rocklink a call at 905-631-5462 or send them an email, info@rocklink.com. That's info@rocklink.com. Our first story is an interesting one. It's not surprising, given what we've seen from the highest levels of civil government and health bureaucracies. And it has everything to do with our Prime Minister's rather extensive air traveling and the consequences of it. Now, I'm going to get this out of the way, and then I'm going to prove it with a bunch of facts and numbers. Our Prime Minister is a globalist, elitist, totalitarian, tyrannical hypocrite who doesn't believe in any of the alarmism that he actually peddles, whether it's the COVID garbage or, in this case, his doomsday rhetoric regarding climate crisis. This is from the National Post. In July, there were only 11 days where Trudeau was not traveling aboard the official prime ministerial jet. In 20 trips in the month of July, almost all of which were for photo ops or goodwill visits, Trudeau logged 26,238 kilometers of jet travel. This included a 5,500-kilometer flight to spend 6 hours at the Calgary Stampede for a breakfast. It was for a Liberal Party breakfast at the Stampede. And a 62-kilometer hop to Kelowna in order to avoid rush hour traffic. So instead of getting in a car like the rest of us peasants, he decided to hop in a plane for 62 kilometers because he can't dare to associate and identify with one of the lowly Canadians. National Post continues, according to Bombardier's own statistics on average fuel burn, even if these Challenger flights had been operated at maximum fuel efficiency, this is best case scenario, they would have consumed a minimum of 33,310 liters of jet A1 fuel. Now, according to the Government of Canada's own statistics, the average Canadian semi-truck consumes 39.5 liters of fuel for every 100 kilometers traveled. This means if Trudeau's 33,000 liters had been pumped into trucks instead of Challenger jets, it could have powered 32 of them on a 2,600-kilometer journey between Regina and Ottawa. If the trucks only needed to drive between Toronto and Ottawa, meanwhile, the 32,000 liters would power 210 of them. The Prime Minister's personal July fuel budget is so large, in fact, that it could power nearly half a day's worth of car ferry travel between Victoria and Vancouver. If used in a Honda Civic, this is wild, by the way. If the fuel was used in a Honda Civic, Canada's best-selling passenger car, 33,310 liters of gasoline would power the car for 482,753 kilometers. That means the amount of fuel that our Prime Minister used in July, if used to power a car, it would have been able to drive around the circumference of our planet 10 times. 10 times. Now, I mean, we're still in a global pandemic, right? That's what I thought. I thought that it's still touch and go. The mandates could come back. Who knows? The world could end. The zombie apocalypse. We still need to get our third and fourth shots, right? That the move is towards that. What's he doing in the air so much? Why isn't he doing his part to save our environment? Why isn't he helping Canadians deal with the crushing consequences of a deadly virus? Why is he on these planes without a mask, boarding them and coming off of them? I'll tell you why. Because all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. That's why. Our Prime Minister, and to a large extent our elected officials and unelected bureaucrats, care nothing for the struggles of the average Canadian. They're the special ruling class, and their rules don't apply to them. There is no climate crisis. And Justin Trudeau knows that there's no climate crisis. He just uses it to gin up fear in Canadians, create an opportunity to grab more power and more wealth and further the goal of his WEF handlers. This is from True North News. Quote, while Trudeau jet set across the country, his government continued to lecture Canadians to do more about climate change. The government targeted Canadian farmers by proposing to cut emissions from fertilizer 30% by 2030 as part of its plan to achieve net zero in the next three decades. Many farmers believe the government's latest climate scheme will threaten food supplies. And they're right, it will. Passifume used online calculators to calculate the Prime Minister's carbon footprint. According to his estimates, Trudeau released nearly 120 metric tons of carbon dioxide into the environment in July. Now, just to put some vile sprinkles on top of this evil status cake, this again is from the National Post. And I'll give some clarity for these numbers and perspective. Listen to this. Trudeau's jet travel emitted roughly 85.8 tons of greenhouse gases into the Earth's atmosphere. The household emissions for an average Canadian is about 4.1 tons per year, according to Stats Canada. Thus, for the month of July, about every 36 hours, Trudeau was burning enough jet fuel to equal the entire yearly carbon emissions for an average Canadian. Or let me put it another way. In the month of July, our right honorable prime tyrant emitted the same amount of greenhouse gases as 21 average Canadian families do in an entire year. He did that in 1 month. And by the way, you also shouldn't own a car. Or if you do, it most definitely shouldn't be a gas-powered car. There are people who still believe that our prime dictator and his regime actually care about the health and well-being of Canadians. Like, those people still exist. And I'm sorry to say this, but if you believe that after 2.5 years, or if you know people who believe that after 2.5 years, that person is either substantially deceived or simply a fool. That ship has sailed a long time ago, the benevolence of our overlords and our elected officials and health bureaucrats. When the same people tell you that unborn babies are just clumps of cells that can be murdered, or that men can become women and vice versa, that it's okay to castrate boys or perform double mastectomies on girls, or it's okay to chemically sterilize children, and that these are good, righteous things and virtuous things to be pursued and funded by taxpayer dollars, when these same people still tell you God didn't create this universe, it's just an accident. We're really just apes, but really not apes, we're fish, but really not fish, we're just bags and sacks of goo and carbon that emerged by chance because of some bang millions and billions of years ago. When these demons tell you that this virus is going to kill us all, or the planet's going to melt by 2050, oh, and give us more money and power to do whatever we say, you know what you can say to them? Get behind me, Satan. Not today, Satan. No, thank you. I will not be complying with your orders. You're lying. You murderous, perverse, and evil death cult. I'll have nothing to do with what you're saying. The problem, of course, is that our right honorable prime hypocrite uses fear as a means of furthering the agenda. Not only the fear of the virus or the fear of the earth melting, but the fear of punishments and consequences for not complying. Coercion is used as a way of getting citizens to bend and offer the pinch of incense upon the altar of Caesar. Get the jab or you can't board a plane. You can't travel freely inside of or outside of your country. Get the vax passport, present it, or you can't go to movies or hockey games or maybe grocery shop. Who knows? Or get life-saving surgery. We'll withhold these things from you as well. Wear the mask, or you can't go to hospitals or visit your loved ones, or you can't go to work to provide for your family. This is the fear that's used by both those at the top of our civil government and, of course, the legacy media, which is just their mouthpiece, the propaganda arm, spreading the fear, saying it's going to kill you, and if you don't do what we tell you to do, then we will crush you under mandates and restrictions and make your life difficult. A very real fear. And this leads to our second story, and that is Canadians are seeking asylum in the United States. In light of what's going on in Canada right now, in light of what has been going on in Canada, but more specifically, for fear of what might be coming this fall. People who are concerned about what happens if mandates come back and restrictions come back and the tyranny is stronger. Am I going to be able to work? Am I going to be able to provide for my family? Am I going to be able to go shopping? What about food shortages? Am I going to be able to visit loved ones? What about lockdowns? People are legitimately afraid of what's coming this fall. This comes to us from True North News. Buffalo immigration lawyer Matthew Colkin has filed asylum applications for at least a half a dozen Canadians who hope to flee the country permanently due to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's pandemic policies. This is one lawyer in Buffalo. We have no idea ultimately how many lawyers in the United States are filling out these papers. This is one guy in Buffalo, already a half a dozen. It continues, in an exclusive interview with True North, Colkin, who is a former director of the Board of Governors of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, explained that his clients fear being persecuted for being unvaccinated should they return to Canada. The application says they've either expressed some sort of political speech or a member of a political social group like unvaccinated individuals that have faced persecution before, either through seizing of bank accounts or loss of employment or forced quarantines, things of that nature. He continues, they're scared to death that if they go back to Canada, they will be singled out and isolated by the government of Canada. They will be unable to travel. Colkin continues, they're afraid they wouldn't get onto a plane in Canada and they will be trapped within their own country and that their abilities to obtain employment are limited there. So, dear audience, we live in a world, we live in a country where our civil government has made its own citizens feel this way, utterly terrified for their safety and their well-being, and seeking asylum in another country. Now, in case we forgot, because it looks to be otherwise, with what we're seeing, we're not China or Syria, right? We're supposed to be, oh, Canada, glorious and free, right? Wrong. Canadians all over the country are leaving. I've spoken with pastors from coast to coast in every province that have people from their church, and some, it's been months, it's been already a year ago, that they've fled to Florida, Texas, Montana, Idaho, deeply fearful of what might be about to happen in our country. Again, not just what has happened, but what is happening, but what is going to happen, this legitimate deep fear about what might happen in our country. And so they're fleeing. Now, I want to be very careful how I navigate what I'm about to say, because I understand these fears. Like, I really do. I'm not emotionally uninvolved, nor are my eyes closed to what's going on. We have young children. My wife and I, we have young children. I see looming food shortages. I see economic collapse on the way. I see more tyranny and more mandates for a number of reasons fast approaching. Could be the COVID stuff, could be monkeypox stuff, could be climate stuff, could be LGBT stuff that tamps down on Christians and churches. I see all this happening. I understand. I really do. Like, I really get the fear and the concern. I see the appeal of heading to the promised land south of the border. And the truth is, there are good and legitimate reasons to leave Canada and head to the U.S. Maybe it's a job thing. Like, maybe work moves you there. There's an opportunity. Maybe it's a family thing. You have family down there. There's a particular service or surgery or something that's needed. You need to get down. Like, there are reasons to go, legitimate reasons to go, or something else the Lord might be directing you to. I'm not going to presume to know God's will. There might be something where he's directing you, again, for a job, a situation, a church. Who knows the reasons? I get it. I get it. And I understand the fear. But what I don't get is just leaving. Just no plans, no reason, nothing there, no idea, packing bags, going. It's tough up here and it's getting tougher. Time to dip. That I have a little bit of a problem with. That I have an issue with. And I know that this might be upsetting for some people. I understand that. Many would disagree with me. And this is going to sting. But it has to be said. The reasons for fleeing Canada for the U.S., I believe, are few and require very good biblical justification, especially as it stands right now. Simply saying it's terrible here and it's getting worse, therefore, cash out, south of the border, I'm out of here. There's no church, there's no, I gotta go. I'm just fleeing, I'm not going to something, I'm just getting away from something. I have a problem with that. And I think the reasons, again, legitimately to go were few and require real good biblical justification. They are going to persecute me for what I believe, some might say. Whether it's my belief in Christ, whether it's my belief about bodily autonomy, which again is ultimately grounded in the truth that God has made human beings with value and dignity, that the government's supposed to operate a certain way, and that people have freedoms given to them as image bearers of God in the country that we have. They're going to persecute me for what I believe. Yeah. Welcome to Following Jesus 101. This is what we signed up for. Take up your cross, get ready to be hated, and be blessed because they hated Christ first of all. This is like discipleship, the beginning. This is the first step. This is the prerequisite. It comes with the territory. The only reasons that we've experienced a comfortable Christianity in Canada are because, one, our nation was established on biblical principles. So our legal system, our judicial system had all these Christian underpinnings. So it was a part of the social norm in a sense. And two, because the church has been utterly apathetic and compromised. So the world doesn't persecute what looks just like it, right? That's the part that hurts a little bit for a lot of Christians. Well, I've never been persecuted in the last 40 years. Is it because you just look like the world? Is it because your life looks just like those who don't know and hate Christ? So this is why we've experienced the blessings that we have for so many years in this country. Now, I can already hear the objections. And so I'm going to address them as strongly and as lovingly as I can. One, what about my kids? Right, that's the first objection. It's not just me. If it were just me, or just me and my wife, or me and my husband, that's fine. That's different. But what about my kids? It's about my kids and their safety, right? Isn't that my top priority? Now, again, I completely understand this. I empathize with this more than you know, because again, I have young children and I'm around other people and families with young children, and I get it. And my eyes are wide open to what's happening in our country and what it looks like will continue to happen for the, you know, for the long-term future. So I get it. And again, I want to speak to this. First of all, your children as human beings, they belong to God. He has ownership over them. He has made them. He sustains their life. Ultimately, they belong to Him. You as a parent are called primarily to disciple, train, and steward them faithfully. Not to secure that they all live to be 100 years old. That's not your job. At least that's not your primary job or your secondary job or your tertiary job. Your role is to disciple, train them so that they will grow to love the Lord and obey Him. You're to steward them well. And what do you think will instill steel in the spine of your children and make them love the Lord more than you paying the great cost of obedience to Christ and being faithful in the midst of suffering and persecution, and the whole time proclaiming the goodness and the grace and the faithfulness of God, your love for Him and your commitment to Him, even as you suffer for it? What will make your kids more bold and more ready to love Christ and also be ready to pay the high cost for following Him than that? Nothing. Nothing. Nothing will. Certainly not just getting out of Dodge, because that won't do it. I want to unpack a little bit of church history as I was thinking about this episode, thinking about the Canadians fleeing, especially as our right honorable prime hypocrite burns more jet fuel than I and 20 other families will all of this year, just in the month of July, which is infuriating. But I want to tell you about John Rogers. If you don't know about John Rogers, look him up. I believe he's in Fox's Book of Martyrs as well. John Rogers was a disciple of William Tyndale. So William Tyndale began the process of translating all of the scriptures into English, which was illegal, by the way. The Holy Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, made that illegal in the early 13th century to translate the Bible into a language other than Latin. So Tyndale began that process and died before he was able to see it completed. John Rogers was one of the disciples of Tyndale, and he continued that work of translating the Bible into English, which again was illegal. He was arrested for it. Now, he was arrested while he had 10 children and his wife was pregnant with their 11th child. So he's arrested, he's put in prison, and while he's in prison, the 11th child is born, which he doesn't see. He's not there for the birth. He doesn't see. It's not like he could hop on Zoom and FaceTime. So his child is born. He's not there. So as John Rogers is being led out to be burned alive at the stake, his whole family's there. So he's there, his wife, all 10 of the children that he knew, plus the newborn that she was holding. This was the first time he laid eyes on his 11th child as he's walking up to be burned alive. Now, credit to the wife, because she could have stayed home and kept the kids home, but she understood what needed to be seen, that the children needed to see their father, who loved Christ enough to give up his life, and they needed to see him be faithful, even to the point of death. Crazy story. So he's being led to die. He's looking over at his family, including the 11th child he's never seen. They ask him to recant, that he would be spared and go with his family. And I can hear all of the good reasons why he should recant. right? Isn't my primary job as a husband and a father to protect my kids and my family? What about my family? They're right there. My 11 children, my wife, who's going to provide for them? Who's going to care for them if I'm gone? The Lord will understand. He'll understand me making this compromise in order to protect my family. This is what he said. That which I have preached, I will seal with my blood. He was the first martyr to die at the hands of Bloody Mary. And we all have English Bibles because of his faithfulness. If you have a Bible that you can read in English right now, in your hands, in your shelf, if you, like me, have a few different versions of them, and you have been able to read the scriptures in English, it's because of men like John Rogers. It's because instead of recanting and instead of shriveling away from the cost of obedience, he went all the way and he was burned alive in front of his family, including the newborn he had met for just a few seconds. And they watched their father be faithful. And now we all have English Bibles. Think about that. You think about the way that many could justify his decision to recant. But imagine the countless generations of people who have been able to read the scriptures and proclaim the gospel in a language they understand because men like Rogers went all the way for obedience and paid the great cost. Second, this is a second objection. The Puritans fled England, right? They fled England, went over to the New World, established the church in the colonies, and now you have Christianity in North America. And the booming of Christianity in North America gives us men like Jonathan Edwards. And then we can look back and see because of the explosion of Christianity in North America, you have the freedoms and you have the blessings and you have the kind of flourishing and fruition that's happened in North America to bless the rest of the world. And then you have other men like Sproul and like Piper and like Carson who have been so influential in the Christian world because the Puritans fled and it was bad. Right. Many did flee, but not all of them. Not all of them fled. Many faithful men stayed in England and suffered immensely because they stayed when persecution was greatest and they were brutally murdered for it. If they didn't stay, if these men all decided to flee, we would have no John Stott, we'd have no J.I. Packer, we'd have no Martin Lloyd-Jones, we'd have no Spurgeon, the Prince of Preachers, Charles Spurgeon himself. These men exist and existed because faithful men stayed in England and paid the great cost of obedience for Christ. And these men who are the product of that costly obedience and staying in the midst of persecution, they have and will continue to bless countless believers for generations because men stayed and they faced the persecution. There's another podcast on the FLF network, the FLF Canada network, the Rebel Podcast. I want to commend the podcast to you in general. But specifically, I want to tell you to go over and I want you to listen to the episode, A Call Not to Flee. Nate Wright, a friend of mine, a pastor in Canada, he hits it out of the park. You need to hear what he has to say about this matter, about what do we do? Do we flee? Do we seek asylum? Do we stay? You got to listen to that podcast. It's encouraging. It's challenging. It's for you. For now, let me encourage you, fellow Canadians, especially those who love the Lord, those who are wrestling with what to do. Stay in Canada. Stay here. This is where the fight is right now. This is where the greatest pushback is happening. This is where pastors are proclaiming the Lordship of Christ loudest and boldest in the world. In the world, this is where the fight is. Because in the United States, you may not have the same heaviness of tyranny. And in other parts of the world where you have crazy tyranny, you don't have the same pushback. This is where it is right now. This is where you have this evil regime and you have people pushing back, pastors pushing back, organizations fighting for freedom to honor Christ. This right now, right here in this country, is where we need to struggle and contend for the truth. This is where the soldiers are to stay. This is where the fight must be fought. This is the watershed moment where the outcome of the war is affected by this battle, and Canada's that battle right now. This is the time to stay. This is the time to fight. Now, some will say, but I can't do it alone. Right. Find a good church. Find a good church. Where do I find a good church? Well, email me at churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com. I'll find you such a church. And by such a church, I don't mean a church that checks all of the doctrinal boxes. I don't mean a church where you go to TGC Canada's website and you look for a church, and just because they're on that website, that's a church. In fact, I would say the vast majority of churches you're going to find on that website are not places where I'm going to tell you to go. I'm talking about churches that won't bend to the state when the state flexes. I'm talking about churches, regardless of the various doctrinal positions, who uphold the Lordship of Christ above all else and will pay the great cost and will love you and care for you and protect you and provide for you and serve you where you can use your gifts and bless the body. That kind of church. I can help you find that kind of church. But they're far away. You might say, hey, I found a church, but it's an hour away. It's an hour halfway. It's 2 hours away. Get used to driving. Get used to driving. That's what I'll say. I was chatting with a pastor friend of mine in Saskatchewan the other day, and he was saying that there's a family that drives 4 hours one way to come to their church on Sunday. And a lot of us might think that's crazy. And I would say they understand. They understand where they need to be. So they're far away. Oh, but they're too far, though, right? It's more than 2 hours or 3 hours or too far. Then move. Move. Move closer to the church. Get close to the community. Oh, but what about money? What about my job? Wait, listen, you need to reprioritize your life. Okay, that's strong. That might sting. You need to get your priorities in check, because the job is not as important as the local fellowship where you serve and are served, where you are built, where you are fed, where you are protected by elders and other believers. That's more important. Right? Reprioritize your life. A solid community of faith is more important than where you work. Maybe you have to change jobs. Maybe you have to work just a regular old job somewhere in order that you could be closer to a solid church that will build you up and strengthen you and encourage you in the Lord. Your job, your good job as it stands, and your dream house, wherever it is, in isolation and disconnected from a solid local church, will equal either the spiritual atrophy of your soul, or you'll be easy picking, or both of them. You need to get your priorities in check. You need to find a good church. You need to connect with other believers so that you are not doing it alone, so that you can stay, so that you can fight. And by fight, I don't mean take up arms. We talked about this on the last episode. It's not about armed revolution. We're not putting the system and flipping it on its head and tearing it down. No, no. Christians are about reformation. We're about pushing back against the darkness, proclaiming the gospel, bringing things under the lordship of Christ. We're about establishing good parallel cultures and communities, our own classical Christian schools. How are we going to provide for one another for work and for food and for protection and for healthcare? Like, that's what we're about, and pushing back and engaging with the gospel and bringing the kingdom of God to bear in all of these spheres. And you can't do it alone. So you need a good church, and you need other believers walking with you. And stay. Stay here. Fight. Join this movement. Actually be a part of pushing back and not complying and engaging in a meaningful kind of way. Now, I said this at the top of the show, that I would let Braveheart speak on the matter, and I'm going to do that in a second. But before I do, I want to reiterate again, if you're hearing this and you don't like what I've said, if it's maybe bristled against you, if you think that this is to you personally, and we're talking about, you're saying I'm a this, or you're saying I'm a coward. First of all, I'm not actually speaking to any individual person. I'm looking at a camera right now. So I'm not actually looking at you. And so if I've said something that has triggered you, believe me that I'm not saying it with you in mind because I don't know the vast majority of our audience. But if there's something that I've said and it's bristled against you, then you know what? Let's talk about it. Reach out to us, info@libertycoalitioncanada.com. Let's engage. Let's debate. Let's actually discuss these things. Let's push back. Let me encourage you. Let me challenge you. Let's wrestle through these things together. I had one family reach out to me. They were ready to go. They were ready to dip down to Florida, and they listened to a podcast a number of months ago, and they reached out. They emailed me. They said, you know what, Andrew, thank you. We've decided we're going to stay. We're going to invest in building up a homeschool co-op and classical Christian schools. And we're going to dig our roots deep at a church, and we will stay because we're thinking about the kind of legacy and the heritage of faith that we're handing off to our kids. And that warmed my soul. But maybe you're thinking, no, Andrew, you're silly. You don't see the writing on the wall. What about your kids? Fine, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let me encourage you. Let me challenge you to stay. And so maybe that's you, but maybe you're the sort of person who's thinking, yeah, I do want to stay and fight and obey Christ, but I don't know where to go. Who do I connect with? I'm wrestling with these things. Reach out. Reach out. Best thing I can do for you is find a solid, non-compliant church that will actually feed your soul and strengthen your spine. I can help you find something like that. And I can encourage you to be faithful to Christ. And there are things that we're doing as a Liberty Coalition. Part of our pushback means our political engagement, right? And so I want to talk again about Christians That Care. And you have to go to christiansthatcare.net, where we're wanting to run, train, equip, and work with the campaigns of 100 Christians, at least. If the Lord gives more, that'd be amazing. But 100 Christians in the upcoming municipal election. In Ontario, primarily, that's where our home base is, but also there are elections coming up in Manitoba and in BC. And our plan is to really coast to coast be involved in every election in Canada in the next 5 years, especially. And so you're going to want to connect with this because maybe you're thinking about, how do I push back? What's a way for me to engage, to stay and fight? Maybe you run in local politics, run for mayor, city council, town council, school board trustee. There's all these opportunities for you to engage and to push back and to be a part of the fight, of the struggle right now, and not just flee. So check out christiansthatcare.net. Maybe that's you. Maybe you know someone who you think would be well suited for that. Point them in that direction. Maybe you're thinking, it's not me, but I want to help. Great, we have a volunteer section. Maybe you're thinking, that's not me, and I want to help, but maybe I can't, but I got money. Great, donate. Right? There are all these ways that you can get connected, that you can be involved with Christians That Care. And maybe you're saying, that's not me. I can't really volunteer. I don't have money. Fine. Be praying for the initiative. Be praying for those who are running, those Christians who are pushing back against the darkness. Pray for the Liberty Coalition as we're involved in training them and equipping them and wanting to see them actually be a part of change and impact their local communities and their cities and then move out from there. There's all sorts of things that you can do, even if you're not running for the mayor of your city or the mayor of your town. And so again, like I said earlier, I'm going to let Braveheart speak and have the last word on the matter as a way to encourage you and challenge you to think about, what do we do in light of the fact that we have a tyrannical, hypocritical, elitist, globalist, right honorable, prime hypocrite dictator who's crushing us, and he's using fear and the propaganda arm of the government-funded media to instill fear that now we're wrestling with, well, what do I do? Do I stay? Do I go? Let's hear what Braveheart has to say about that.
And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight? And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
They might take a lot from us, but they will never take what is ours in Christ Jesus. He has freed us from the prison of sin. He has freed us from the power of death. And he has freed us to persevere in him. This has been the Liberty Dispatch. And as always, Galatians 5:1.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.